She's one of the most prominent women in the NFL, the brilliant legal mind behind Jaguars owner Shad Khan. Just ahead, we tell her story. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast on iTunes and through the WJCT app. Just ahead, a fierce conversation with Jaguars Senior Vice President and Chief Legal Officer Megha Parekh. You can get on the line now with your questions about the team and Shad Khan's various business deals. And Megha, the number to join us, 549-2937. Then later, speaking of the NFL, Justin Timberlake takes the stage as the halftime performer at Super Bowl 2018. That just got announced, but some fans are still miffed about what happened the last time he did that. That show that involved Janet Jackson. We'll take a look back at that. Plus, growing the future leaders of the First Coast. A look ahead to this year's Generation Wow event. All of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, she is the brilliant legal mind behind Jacksonville's NFL franchise, the Jaguars. Megha Parekh was the youngest general counsel in NFL history when Shad Khan hired her in 2013, just 27 years old. Calling Parekh an overachiever is something of an understatement. She finished at Harvard in just 3 years. And now, not only is she responsible for all legal and compliance matters involving the Jaguars, but she's also got oversight over Shad Khan's Fulham Club in London, and her legal portfolio includes the new Daly's Place amphitheater, too, the music business. Plus, she's overseeing Khan's far-flung business interests, including that new downtown shipyards development that's going up on the North Bank as well. Parekh is the child of two immigrants from India, and she will be the keynote speaker at the She is Fierce Fall Meetup coming up November 9th at Everbank Field. Full disclosure, I'm the local chapter leader of She is Fierce. Megha Parekh is on the line now with a preview of her talk and a whole lot more, and we're pleased to welcome her to the show. Megha, thanks for being with us.
Of course. Thanks for having me. Good morning, Melissa.
And what are your questions for Jacksonville Jaguars Vice President and Chief Legal Officer Megha Parekh? The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can also weigh in on Facebook. And I did not realize this, Megha, about you, that you were the youngest general counsel in the history of the NFL when you were hired by Shad Khan here in Jacksonville, fresh out of Harvard Law School in 2013, 27 years old. Pretty amazing. How did you come from Harvard down here to Jacksonville? How did that happen for you?
So I actually had 3.5 years in between. So I graduated law school early, early in the sense that I finished college a year early, but I graduated law school in 2009. Straight from law school, I went to New York to go work at a law firm that had a sports practice. And one of the deals that I worked on, and actually my very first deal as summer associate, was working for Shad in his potential acquisition of the then St. Louis Rams, which over the years transformed into his acquisition of the Jaguars. About a year after the deal closed, the job opened up, and they asked if I would come down to Jacksonville. He would bet me anywhere from $10 to $100 million 10 years ago, and told me that I would be living in Jacksonville, Florida, and general counsel of an NFL team. I would have taken that bet 100 times out of 100 and lost.
Not what you envisioned for yourself?
No, and that's only because that's my own sort of shortcoming of not envisioning what could be large enough.
So you weren't planning on working for, now you had interned for the Boston Red Sox, you'd interned for MTV, some really interesting internships. You were clearly going to do something big and interesting, but this wasn't what you had planned. What's it been like working for this NFL team and working for Shad Khan?
So I would say there's two things. One, it's the reason why I'm calling you on the phone as opposed to in your studio right now is that since the day that I started, this job has been, in a great way and in a very challenging way at times, much different than I expected. So the breadth of responsibility was greater than just legal. So I have human resources and technology as well. And that, especially on the employee development side, has been a really interesting piece of work. The actual type of businesses that we're involved in, whether it be football or now music or some of the other things that we've been working on with respect to downtown development, have continued to be professional challenges. Playing in London, we're the only team that consistently plays there year after year and have committed to play there through 2020. And so the international aspect is a unique part of the job. And then I've been consistently pleasantly surprised from day one, especially being a young woman walking into an NFL office and not really knowing what to expect. From the top down, everyone here is so respectful, and they don't look at me as their female lawyer. They look at me as their lawyer, and you can't ask for anything more than that. It's been a tremendous professional opportunity, and that I think what people really focus on here is the quality of your work and not any of the other factors that might otherwise play into what happens at the office.
549-2937 to connect with the Jaguars' Mega Pareg. That's interesting to talk about. You're at the ripe old age of 32 now. And, of course, the NFL in the past hasn't really been known for its forward-looking attitude about, you know, gender equality. But you haven't encountered that type of attitude in the executive suite, in the boardroom.
No, I really haven't. And frankly, it's been, I think, throughout my career, being a woman, something that's really helped me, in that when you're sitting around a conference table full of attorneys who are all in suits and you're the one who's got a pair of heels on and a slightly different colored jacket, you're just slightly more memorable. And obviously your work product's going to have to speak for itself. But in the industry that I've been in, whether it's been in law or football, being a woman has actually been an asset. And that only works to the extent that you're surrounded by people who are willing to respect your position and actually seek your counsel, and a lot of that comes with earning their trust.
You're driven. You're the daughter of two immigrants from India, and it's a well-worn trope, but is the immigrant experience of your family in any way related to your drive to succeed?
It's an integral part of my drive to succeed. I think that my parents, from the time that I was a child, really emphasized that the most important thing was education. They came to this country and they knew that the opportunities that were before them were better than what was available to them at home, and they knew the opportunities for their children, I have an older brother, would be better here than they were at home. And that's generally proven true. My first cousins are there, and our experiences and the opportunities in front of us overall are vastly different. But up until the day that I graduated law school, they would emphasize all the time that education is the most important thing. They wanted me to get one, and they wanted me to get the best one possible.
But you still didn't think you could get into Harvard, right?
I did not. So it was actually at the prompting of our high school baseball coach. So I was manager of our baseball team in high school, and he was the one who really said, you know what? He's like, just try. He's like, just try. He's like, I think that you could get in. It had been a few years since anyone in our high school district had gotten in, and I filled out my application while working at Pizza Hut and applied early and was absolutely floored a couple months later when the big envelope came in the mail.
And there you are. You went to Harvard College and then Harvard Law School, what they call a double Harvard. So impressive. You work so hard that you just shared this with me, and you'll talk about this at your fierce talk, by the way, on November 9th at Everbank Field. You just decided, Mega Pareg, to freeze your eggs. So that when you finally get around to having kids, you're too busy to think about that right now. But you just decided to freeze your eggs. Tell me about that.
I did. It was a little bit of an insurance policy, and luckily one that I'm able to afford. So a friend of mine, actually about a year ago, we were out, and he said, look, he's like, is a very good friend of mine, my older mate from New York. He's like, look, he's like, I'm going to be really honest with you. He's like, love you, you're not getting any younger. He's like, you are still single. He's like, this is just something that you're probably going to want to think about for your own peace of mind before it gets too late. So it had been a while, but I decided to time it up with the season being over, summer being over, just because I knew what my body would be going through, and timed it pretty close to our bye week. So it's unfortunately not as easy to schedule as I had hoped. And I ended up having to miss a concert in Orlando on Saturday, but made it out Thursday night, made it to the Gators game on Saturday, and basically just lost a day in between. One of the hardest things for me was trying to actually listen to my body and understand that it needed some rest after surgery. And I did have to do injections that were self-administered, which was also incredibly difficult. And I traveled to New York and Pittsburgh during it, so those Sharps came with me to MetLife Stadium and to Pittsburgh. And my last set of injections, I'm definitely afraid of needles. One of my last sets of injections was actually in the press box in Pittsburgh. Leonard Fournette was running. He had forward progress, had actually lost a couple yards, and I was like, shoot, I am not missing the fourth quarter. And so I got those last couple of injections in really quickly and watched the rest of the game.
So you squeezed that in between everything else. No sweat. Amazing.
Plenty of sweat. It was not graceful. I am not going to pretend that it was easy. Part of that was just me being a huge baby about needing to inject myself to some degree, but more than happy to talk to anybody who has questions about the process. My body is still, unfortunately, recovering. Actually, yesterday was my first workout in about a month, so 3 weeks.
Let's talk about that, too. You're candid about, and something that at She Is Fierce that women really talk about quite openly are their struggles and their vulnerabilities, and you're going to do that at this meetup November 9th at the stadium. You have dealt with an eating disorder since the age of 12, correct?
Yeah, so it's very luckily been mostly under control, especially over the last 5 years. So it comes in ebbs and flows. But I would say that the thing that's pretty constant that I'm sure anyone who's had one can identify with is when you have a really disproportionate sense of what your own body is. And every time that you're eating, there's sort of an inner monologue about exactly how much you're eating and whether or not it's healthy and whether or not you should be having it or not. And that's constant, and that stays with you. And then in my own mind, I know that when I look in the mirror, I see something different than what other people see. And frankly, even when I see pictures, I see something different than what my mind recognizes. And so it's a constant battle that I think is not, certainly not unique to me. It's been in control for the most part. And I would say that it sort of really tends to, which makes perfect sense, it tends to sort of exacerbate when I let work consume my life.
Right. And I think that's something that's so powerful that you're revealing, because people see you as this just bulletproof, fabulously successful, driven person. But like all of us, you struggle with things, and you have an amazing story to share. Let's go to a few calls now for Megha Parekh of the Jacksonville Jaguars, 549-2937. John on the South Side. Hi, John. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa, and thank you for taking my call and enjoying talking with your guest. I've got a parking ticket, but what I really wanted to talk about was...
I got one the other day, too, John. I hate that.
I do, too.
And you know what? The guy came up and was putting it on my windshield just as I walked up to feed the meter. It really, that was so annoying. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Well, going forward, and... you know, with downtown and the shipyards, you know, we do have a downtown investment authority and a CRA zone from the 401 and the Matthews Bridge. And my question has to do, when we bring in the USS Adams, you know, a Navy ship, whether it's decommissioned or not, will there be a restricted zone potentially created, or will everyone have access, you know, right up to the docks, you know, because there's tremendous fishing and opportunity and all kinds of enjoyment in that area. And I just, going forward, as everything is being put into place, I hope it'll be opened up and not restricted. And I wondered if you could just address that, or if that's even been brought up in any other previous meetings.
Yeah, thanks for that question. Thank you, John. Yeah, Megha Parekh, you're involved with legal oversight into Shad Khan's plans for the shipyard's development. Can you bring us, shed any light on that question and the plans for that parcel? There's so much curiosity about it.
Absolutely. And first of all, John and Melissa, thank you both for contributing to our general tax fund with your parking ticket payments. John, that's a great question about the shipyard. So I came from Manhattan right before coming down to Jacksonville, and I lived on the west side of New York. And what was amazing to me to see over the course of probably about 10 or so years is the development of the west side. They finished out piers, they put shipping containers and a few restaurants out there, and they built these parks out there. So I was used to that experience on the river, and frankly, the Hudson's not as nice as the St. John's. When I first moved to Jacksonville, I remember trying to find a spot on the river to watch the sunset. And my very first week, I ended up sitting in a parking lot because that was the best that I could find to watch the sunset that night. So if you take a look at the plan that was submitted, which is still very much in the developmental phase, there is a really strong mix of public and private uses on the shipyards and that park sites that we're proposing. I think that everybody understands that the river is a significant asset to downtown Jacksonville. I just actually had a call on Friday with folks from the DIA and a handful of others about how you can engage and activate the riverfront. And obviously, the shipyards and that park are two critical pieces of that. But yes, absolutely. I think that specifically what the public access will entail will be determined as the plan is further developed and finalized, but that there will be a significant public component to it is part of the plan.
And as you said, you were hired initially to handle legal and compliance and such for the NFL franchise, but your portfolio has expanded rapidly. You, Shad Khan and Mark Lamping with the Jags, they went all in on Daly's Place, the live music amphitheater. You're now handling all of the issues related to that. The Shipyards development, Shad Khan's Fulham Club in London, your portfolio is growing all the time. Does that involve continuing legal education? I would think it's never boring at work, but there's a lot of interesting studying and pivoting going on as well.
Absolutely. So someone once has called me a learning junkie, and I think that's a completely fair label to put on me. I find almost anything to be interesting and will read about it and learn about it. And I learned very early in my career that one of the biggest mistakes that you can make is pretending that you can know something, that you do know something when you don't. So I'm not afraid to ask questions. I have great mentors that have worked with in the past. I'm not afraid to pick up the phone and call. And there's a great network of other NFL counsel, some of whom are doing similar things with respect to real estate development for their owners or other matters that come up. And then Fulham does have a general counsel, because it would absolutely be malpractice for me to try and practice UK law. And we work together really regularly in terms of making sure that the two teams are running smoothly, but then also with respect to the Jaguars' activities in London. So I think it is really, really important to never fake it and ask questions and make sure that you learn and educate yourself. Most of my beach walks are either a combination of practicing Spanish through an app or watching CLEs.
549-2937, Ira on the South Side. Hey, Ira, good morning to you.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for a great show. So I'm a U.S. Army Airborne retired, and I have a question for your guest. Has she been able to avail herself of the Naval Air Station Jacksonville's Judge Advocate General to understand that this whole business about rendering a salute or standing for the national anthem has nothing to do with the legal requirements of active duty service members? There's a UCMJ requirement, Uniform Code of Military Justice, requirement that all of us that were on active duty render salutes, but it does not apply to our family members. It certainly does not apply to me now as a retired military person. It doesn't apply to anybody who served in the military. It's a cultural tradition, but there is no legal requirement to render a salute to the flag or to stand for the national anthem unless you are an active duty service member. I was just wondering if your guest has had a chance to have that conversation with the Judge Advocate General at the Naval Air Station Jacksonville, just so that she understands that Mr. Khan's position is certainly well within his rights. Thank you.
Okay, yeah, thanks for that, Ira. That's been, of course, a high-profile flap involving the franchise as well, Mega.
Absolutely, and Ira, for what it's worth, that information is new to me, so I appreciate it. I wasn't aware what the specific requirements were, so I learned something new this morning.
Yeah, and it won't be the focus of your talk on November 9th, but it is something that's come up, and the team did recently apologize to local military brass. That's something that we've covered on this program. Let me ask you, too, your boss, Shad Khan, is a figure of much fascination, not just here in Jacksonville, but around the world. What's he really like to work for? What would surprise people about him as a boss and a colleague?
I would say there's two things. One is that there's no topic, literally no topic, that I've ever been speaking with him about that he has not been more knowledgeable than me on, whether it's cars, which makes sense, obviously, because it's the auto parts business, or guitars or shoes. The depth and breadth of his knowledge on nearly any topic is really impressive. And that makes it amazing because you can learn something from him all the time. And his vision is second to none, right? He doesn't stop at thinking about what is. He always goes to the extra step of thinking what could be and what should be based on what best practices are, whether it comes to the design of the amphitheater or the size of our video board or any other aspect of our business. The other thing that I would say is that for a billionaire, he is incredibly down to earth. So we were flying to L.A. for meetings, and he was making himself some tea, and he handed me his cup of tea because he knew that I wanted some as well. And it's that sort of thing where you can't necessarily teach people kindness. You can just tell sort of what the goodness of their nature is. And it's the way that he interacts with other people, including staff, at no matter what level they are, is something that everyone should seek to emulate in the professional world.
Well, this is just a short preview of what I know is going to be an amazing talk that you're going to give, Mega. Thank you so much for getting on the phone with us. And by the way, yeah, I think you have a meeting with Shad Khan in about 3 minutes. So I know you got to go. Thanks for getting on the line with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Melissa. Have a great day.
You too. She's Jaguar's Senior Vice President and Chief Legal Officer, Mega Parekh. Mega is our fierce speaker at the She Is Fierce Live Fall Meetup at Everbank Field, Thursday, November 9th at 5:30 p.m. at the U.S. Assure Club East. It's going to be amazing. I'm the chapter leader for She Is Fierce in Jacksonville. Join me and Mega for cocktails, connections, inspiration to celebrate female leaders and up-and-comers. Baptist Health will be there, our chapter sponsor, with their For Her initiative, Health Resources for Women. A portion of ticket sales will benefit the Dolores Bar Weaver Policy Center. Some women will actually win a headshot portrait session right on site from renowned photographer and makeup artist Renee Parenteau. It's going to be so much fun. Get your tickets now. Just go to 904tix.com, 904tix.com, and search She Is Fierce. That's coming up November 9th. Much more still ahead later. A look ahead to Generation Wow, empowering future women leaders of the First Coast. But up next, should there be justice for Janet? Our entertainment analyst Joey O'Hearn weighs in, speaking of the NFL, as Justin Timberlake prepares to take the stage at Super Bowl 2018. Back in a moment.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
As opioids flooded America by the truckload, a top official at the DEA tried to stop the shipments.
Everybody was making money and people were dying.
The companies pushed back. So did his agency.
Cases would just sit and languish for weeks, for months, for a year.
How the government failed to stop an epidemic on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
There's a long history between jazz and classical music, but it's never been more sharply focused than it was at the 2017 Ojai Music Festival. That's all because of this year's music director, pianist Vijay Iyer. Next time on Jazz Night in America, new music from Vijay's acclaimed sextet and the premiere of his first violin concerto. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturdays at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the Jacksonville Hearing and Balance Institute and the Hearing Center are collaborating with WJCT to host a free medical seminar about hearing loss. It's coming up next Friday, November 3rd, in our studios. I spoke about it with Dr. Douglas Green, specialist with the Jacksonville Hearing and Balance Center. Dr. Douglas Green, a pleasure. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
And of course, you and I can hear each other perfectly as we talk over the phone. But you provide hearing imbalance solutions for people that struggle with that. You deal with folks who have hearing loss. You're a comprehensive hearing center. And this is important. Hearing loss affects 1 in 3 people over age 65. And so you're bringing this free community medical seminar to WJCT. What will people learn when they come out to this?
Well, many things. I think the patients will learn more about what causes hearing loss. There are many causes. Sometimes the hearing loss can be a nerve-type hearing loss. In fact, that's the most common problem, where the hair-like nerve endings don't work as well as time goes by. There can also be simple solutions, though. Sometimes it's a mechanical problem, like a buildup of wax, or occasionally even fluid under the eardrum or something of that nature can cause hearing loss. The concern is that with hearing loss, there can be downstream effects. And we're learning more and more about the downstream effects. It used to be that when people, you saw someone with a hearing loss, you would just see someone and they would kind of go off by themselves. They would isolate themselves, and maybe they were in a group, and you could kind of tell the person had hearing loss because they were off by themselves, not communicating or participating in the conversations. And one of the things that we're learning, and it's very, very sad, but it seems to be a pretty clear-cut association, is that there is a clear-cut association with hearing loss and cognitive decline. And nobody really understands why that occurs. There's lots of different thoughts about why that may occur, but it clearly does happen that people who have hearing loss are more likely to have cognitive issues as life goes past them.
Dementia, Alzheimer's, you mean, right?
Not always. Going to those extremes, but more cognitive issues than the people that don't have. It's not an absolute. It doesn't mean if you have hearing loss, you're going to get cognitive. But there is an association there. There is a situation where you're more likely to have cognitive issues if you have hearing loss. And there's even some early studies now out of France that suggest that people that get their hearing loss treated, the cognitive decline doesn't go down quite as much. There's less, the deterioration is less. There's less of a cognitive decline in people that get treated for their hearing loss.
Interesting. So the better you hear, the healthier your brain is.
Absolutely.
Well, this is so important to so many people. When people come out to WJCT Friday, November 3rd, this is a free seminar. They'll hear about the latest in research. They'll hear about the latest in technology so that they can get a free screening about their hearing and they can learn about technology to help them have better hearing. And there's a lot to talk about there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And the exciting thing is there's lots and lots of answers, and many times the answer is hearing aids or amplification, which is just getting better and better and better as the years have gone past. The hearing aids are almost all digital now. They can connect to remote sources of sound, so they can remotely connect with a telephone or with the television so that the sounds are brought directly to the hearing aid. Many people, though, that are not candidates for hearing aids are potentially candidates for a cochlear implant, which is a whole different type of device that can help people that are no longer able to benefit from hearing aids.
It's going to be a very interesting event here in our studio. This is the Jacksonville Hearing Imbalance Institute and the Hearing Center collaborate with WJCT on this free medical seminar about hearing loss. This is coming up Friday, November 3rd, here at WJCT, and it's free. You want people to register in advance, though, correct?
Yes, we would like for people to register in advance. That would be excellent.
They need to go to your website, jhbi.org, or the Hearing Center. It's just betterhearingjacks.com.
Correct. Either website would work well, and we would love to have as many people come as can possibly come.
Free lunch, too, so you can't beat that. Dr. Douglas Green, yeah. Thank you so much, Dr. Douglas Green, with the Jacksonville Hearing Imbalance Institute. We appreciate your thoughts this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa.
Well, pop star Justin Timberlake just got announced as the 2018 Super Bowl halftime show performer. Some people aren't excited to see him hit the stage in February, unless Janet Jackson can also make a return engagement. Remember back in 2004? Timberlake was involved in Jackson's infamous wardrobe malfunction during her own halftime performance. At the end of their duet on stage, the former NSYNC member ripped off a piece of Jackson's costume, accidentally exposing her breast. Here's an excerpt from their infamous onstage tango. The incident is what put the term wardrobe malfunction into our collective vocabulary. It also became known as Nipplegate. It was broadcast live to nearly 90 million viewers, and it slapped CBS with a $500,000 fine from the FCC. That was later thrown out by the Supreme Court. And while Timberlake was technically the one responsible for the whole gaffe, Jackson got the majority of the scrutiny and the criticism from the media and the public. She was banned from that year's Grammy Awards, but Timberlake got to attend. And her singles and music videos were blacklisted by Viacom, which then owned CBS and MTV, among other entertainment channels. Now, at the time, there was a lot of speculation that the so-called wardrobe malfunction was, in fact, just a publicity stunt. Both Timberlake and Jackson later insisted it was all an accident and that the whole bit really involved him yanking off her top to reveal a red bustier, but it didn't work out the way it had been intended. Many pop culture critics have argued that Jackson's career suffered in the wake of the controversy, while Timberlake's thrived. On Sunday, after the Timberlake halftime show announcement, the hashtag Justice for Janet began trending, with fans calling for Janet to be invited back to perform at Super Bowl 2018. Our occasional entertainment contributor, Joey O'Hearn, has been watching all this, and he has some thoughts about it. Good morning, Joey.
Good morning.
All right, so fans of Janet Jackson aren't too happy right now about all this. What do you think?
You know, it's interesting because when I heard that Timberlake, because it was rumored for a while that Timberlake was going to do the halftime show, and then finally he and his longtime friend Jimmy Fallon took to social media to kind of make the announcement, and I was thrilled. I think Justin Timberlake is an insane, stellar phenomenon.
Great performer.
Incredible performer. But then I started to see the hashtag Justice for Janet backlash, and I was like, this is absurd. But then when you look into it, it's actually somewhat credible because, you know, at the time I was much younger, but I can remember watching it live on CBS.
I remember watching it live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me because one article I read, I think from USA Today, said that this is a case of white privilege. And I don't even think it's a case of white privilege. I think it's a case of
male privilege.
Male privilege and sexism in the industry. It's ironic to me that at the time it was sold as Justin Timberlake, this new solo performer, has brought on this seasoned legend. And then when it all went down, the tables really turned on her. And then the same week, she was banned from the Grammys, and he got to go and won. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. It was almost like, Janet, you're the bad one. We need Timberlake for the ratings. And I think it's interesting because, like you said, she was banned from Viacom, which at the time owned CBS, VH1, MTV, and a lot of the biggest national radio stations. So they really not only blacklisted her, but stalled her career. And the album after that, which I forget the name of it, that she came out with, did nothing on the charts. It was a complete and total flop. And she really did experience a lot of backlash. And in my opinion, as somebody who kind of follows the pop culture entertainment industry, I don't think Janet's ever successfully bounced back.
No, not quite.
Musically. While on the flip side of that, Justin Timberlake is probably one of the biggest male stars of our time.
And he never really apologized to her for
And I think that's
all
where people,
of that either.
People are probably getting worked up about is because if you watch when he won the Grammy in 2004, the same week everything happened at the Super Bowl, his apology was not to Janet. It was very much like, I am sorry if you're offended. I'm sorry if you were hurt. Thanks for my Grammy. Goodbye. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people are thinking, how's this fair when the FCC and the NFL kind of unofficially said, we probably won't be having them back. And then 14 years later, they've rolled out this marketing plan and they're amping it up that Timberlake returns and Janet's nowhere to be found.
And I remember at the time CBS got slapped with this huge fine from the FCC.
Which I think is one of like the biggest fines.
One of the biggest ever. Yeah. The Supreme Court later tossed that out.
Right.
But it was seen as obscene that her breast and her nipple were exposed on live television. And you know, you could actually make the case that the Free the Nipple campaign that women have started in recent years, pointing out that men can show their chests and nipples in public, but women can't, that it really kind of took hold after that Super Bowl flap.
But I also think it goes deeper than that. I think it proves in the entertainment industry, we are much, and I can say this as a male, we are much more forgiving to men. I mean, I think we're seeing that with the whole Harvey Weinstein scandal, for lack of better wording, that a lot of these women were terrified to speak out because they thought they'll never believe me because I'm a woman. And now we're seeing what the truth is. I think with Janet Jackson, I think she has probably taken the brunt of it more than she should have, especially when she was the one that was kind of, I hate to say for lack of better wording, doing Timberlake a favor to kind of come and perform with him as it was the start of his solo career. And she's Janet Jackson. I mean, she
was the bigger star at the time, by far.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. So it's interesting to see the backlash. I'm interested to see because the NFL came out yesterday with a statement saying, we've never banned Janet. However, we do not speak or comment on any performer's anticipated plans. So it'll be interesting to see if this justice for Janet goes away. I don't think it will, because I think it's the closer we get to the Super Bowl, the only bigger the story is going to become.
Now, as I'm looking at some of the fallout from this that happened since it all went down in 2004, once people had time to think about this, they did sort of reflect on it. Here's something Timberlake said in 2006. He admitted that Janet Jackson suffered more harshly. Here's a quote he gave to an interview he gave to MTV. If you consider it 50-50, then I probably got 10% of the blame. I think America is harsher on women. I think America is unfairly harsh on ethnic people. He also said, I could have handled the aftermath better. If there's something I could have done in her defense that was more that I could have realized, then I would have. And so hindsight's always 20/20,
right,
particularly if you're a young guy or a young person. And so there is that element of it as well. But it really was one of those cultural moments that stands out.
Well, and it's so funny to me that you look at, it was only 14 years ago, and how in 2004 that happening was one of the outrage over that. And now you see what's in the mainstream media. And if that would have happened to Janet Jackson in 2017 or 2018, this wouldn't be a topic of conversation. You know, it's interesting to me how that so has drastically changed where our moral compass has turned to in 14 years.
Yes, so much has happened. It is funny to think about how much has happened in the ensuing years.
I mean, I had this conversation with somebody the other day. I can remember when Christina Aguilera's Dirty video came out, and it was banned across the world for being ironically too dirty. And now you look at what pop stars are putting out, and you think to yourself, that would have never been the case, you know, 12, 14, 16 years ago.
Sure. Now, I'm just going to read a few of these tweets with the hashtag Justice for Janet, Joey O'Hearn. Here's one. Justin, and again, I think you said you disagreed with this, but Justin Timberlake being welcomed back to the Super Bowl with open arms is the definition of white privilege. Please try and justice for Janet. The NFL still hasn't lifted the ban, but Justin is free to perform. It's wrong, and she deserves better.
I mean, I guess the question is how does the NFL / Justin Timberlake fix this? I mean, is it one of those things where his hand is forced where now he kind of has to bring Janet out? Because then at that point, does she even want to come? You know
right.
what I'm saying?
Wouldn't it be kind of a mind blower if she did?
I mean, I personally
at this point,
would love
there's going to be so much buildup. Everyone's going to be sitting there on the edge of their seats wondering if there will be some sort of surprise moment, whether it's her or maybe somebody else coming on stage that you don't expect.
But then again, it's interesting that you say that, because I wonder if there are any other pop stars, for lack of better wording, who are willing to take the risk now that they see the backlash that Janet Jackson got at the time and how it hurt her career, and still, in my opinion, hurting her career, Are there any pop stars out there that want to take that chance?
Here's another tweet with that hashtag. He shouldn't even have a second shot at that stage. He ruined a powerful black woman's career forever.
And that's what a lot of people are saying on social media.
Do you think that's fair? Do you think that's going too far?
I don't know if he technically ruined her career. I think he probably did not do everything he could have at the time to say, hey, this is 50-50. This is what happened. Because let's be honest, at the time of the... he was at the peak of his solo career. His debut album had just came out. Highly anticipated debut at the Grammys, which he won. I don't think he was going to do anything to hurt his chances of continuing to build his personal career.
But as you pointed out, and as we've learned recently with the Harvey Weinstein scandal, the fall from grace can happen much more quickly and much more easily for women.
Agreed.
Than it can for men. It can be very easily for a high-profile woman to have something happen to her that can kill her career. Over and over again, we see guys, they just are given more chances. Look at Robert Downey Jr.
That's exactly who I was thinking about.
I mean, he's a guy who was so on the skids that he was literally so strung out on drugs that he was going into random people's houses and passing out in strangers' bedrooms.
Right.
And he was given chance after chance to clean up. Everybody felt sorry for him. The industry just gave him so many chances to come back, and he finally did. But you really do have to ask if a woman with his same level of talent would have been given that many chances to get clean and rebound like that.
I think it's an interesting question. One of the things that is, I hate to say for lack of a better word, a staple of my youth is the infamous Britney Spears breakdown. Kind of the start of the tabloid mania. And a lot of people question, has she ever successfully bounced back to her career? She has a very successful Vegas show, but let's be honest, Britney Spears is still the brunt of the joke a lot of times for people when you make a joke about having a mental breakdown. On the flip side of that, you have Robert Downey Jr., who is arguably one of the biggest movie stars of our time, making, I think, like $80 million for an Iron Man movie every time. So it is, interesting. Especially when you look at the caliber of their careers at the time. At the time, Robert Downey Jr. was a megastar, as was Britney Spears, and how they probably didn't come back the way each of them thought they would. You look at somebody like Lindsay Lohan, who was time after time again, not had the comeback that many people think she could have, and a lot of it maybe or maybe not is because people judge her on her past.
Mm-hmm. Well, with all of that said, what else are you following in the entertainment world?
I think, sadly, this is just as much as it has been. I think it is just the tip of the Harvey Weinstein scandal. I don't think this is going anywhere. I know we kind of talked a little bit yesterday on Twitter. I find it interesting that a lot of Hollywood's A-list men are saying, yeah, I heard the stories and I've heard the rumors. In my opinion, to a degree, that makes you just as accountable. But I think this is just the beginning. I think when you have Academy Award winner, A-list women like Lupita Nyong'o and Gwyneth Paltrow coming out saying, yeah, this was me, I was one of his victims, I think it is just the tip of the iceberg. And I think it's going to be interesting. I believe the New York Attorney General is opening an investigation into himself and the Weinstein Company. I saw yesterday that one of his assistants broke her NDA. I think it's going to be a big story that we're going to follow for a long time.
Always great to have your insights from the world of entertainment. Jacksonville's own Joey O'Hearn. Follow him on Twitter at Joey O'Hearn.
Yep.
And in a moment, a look ahead to Jacksonville's future leaders of tomorrow as we spotlight Generation Wow. That's coming up right after this. Keep listening.
The Democratic Party has had almost a year to heal from last year's election. Critics say voters still need to know what the party is for and not just who it is against. Some important battles lie ahead in Virginia, Alabama, and elsewhere. How might Democrats go from resisting the president to retaking power? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
on the next Fresh Air, how climate change, rising sea levels, and extreme weather are affecting American cities. We talk with Jeff Goodell, the author of The Water Will Come. He's a contributing editor at Rolling Stone and has covered climate change for 15 years. We'll also talk about how the Trump administration is rolling back regulations designed to slow climate change. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state.
About the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
WJCT and the Florida Theater present Wildcrest live on stage at the Florida Theater March 4th at 1 p.m. and 4:30 p.m. Watch the Kret Brothers bring their creature adventure fun from the popular PBS Kids series to life on stage. Tickets available at floridatheater.com.
Convinced you've heard it all before? Well, at Indie Endeavor, we challenge that notion. Tune into WJCT's After Hours for the best songs you've never listened to. Tuesdays at 11 p.m.
Welcome back. Finally, this hour, it's your chance to invest in and support the future female leaders of the First Coast. It's all happening at Generation WOW, coming up a week from tomorrow, Wednesday, November 1st, on the UNF campus. Connecting teen girls with women leaders in this area, and this is free. Here with a preview, Donna Orender, founder of Generation W and Generation WOW, and executive director, Atiya Abdelmalik. Ladies, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Hey, listen, we're bringing up the next fierce generation of women.
Yes.
That's what this is all about.
And so this is exciting because you've had Generation W in this area for several years now, and then you added to that Generation WOW, bringing up the next generation of young women, teenage girls.
Teenage girls. Well, you know, this is our fifth year. It's hard to believe how fast that goes. And this all generated from a panel that we had at W. You know, we had seven fantastic, very diverse young women. We had them on a stage. We worked with them for weeks. And the questions really were simple. What is important to you, right? How can we help you? Uh-huh. And you know, there isn't a young woman. Listen, we know, right? We do this. There isn't a woman who wouldn't like somebody to look at them as if they matter and then help provide them resources. And WOW is a amazing, amazing place to gather.
All right. So, Atiya, this is coming up on November 1st at UNF. What are these young ladies going to get to experience?
It's a transformational day. So not only are they connected to women leaders and they have an opportunity to really dream of all of the limitless possibilities in their lives, but everything from this mentoring-mentee relationship, getting inspired to get prepared for how to succeed in life, mm-hmm. and connecting with 400 other students across, you know, the various regions. And it's just a transformational day that leads them to this next moment.
Yeah. Mentorship is so important. You can't be what you can't
see. We have that panel, by the way, and State Attorney Melissa Nelson's coming, and we also have our wonderful editor-in-chief of the newspaper, Mary Kelly Palka's coming, and we have our wonderful Michelle Cook. We are really putting people in front of these young women, mm-hmm. In a way that, and they can, and connecting and seeing them. It's really exciting. And I will say this, you know, the girls, we weren't sure where this was going to go, but the girls keep telling us how important this is. And therefore, that's why it's grown. We've moved out of the little theater to the big theater at UNF. And it's also, we have a WOW club. And I want to thank all of those girls in Ponte Vedra. And now it rains and Rebolt. And I don't want to miss anyone. Ed White.
And Andrew Jackson.
Andrew Jackson. And now we have weekly WOW clubs. And Atiya has authored these beautiful materials and curriculum that's really being an ongoing presence.
So how do you choose girls to come to Generation Wow? How are they coming into this?
So we're targeting students in grades 9 through 11th. We do have 8th graders as well as seniors. But really reaching out, connecting with the high schools and the partnerships we have, from parents to our great city year partnerships. And so really drawing in from the community and the schools to get girls involved.
Yes, not too late for more girls to be part of it.
Not at all. Matter of fact, what we have this week will be the principals will calling up and say, we have a busload. And we'll be like, okay, let's go. And they come from the 5 counties. Region, which is also interesting to us, Melissa.
I didn't realize that.
They do. I mean, okay. We target St. John's County and Duval County, but the word gets out, which again tells us that the services that we're providing has real resonance for these girls.
This is excellent because it's providing a pipeline for young women, a network that's really, honestly, it's always existed for men. And what you're doing is you're creating that structure and that pipeline for young women, which is so great.
Without a doubt. When these girls leave at the end, I mean, everybody should have the experience that for several hours, and we talk about this at W as well, that you feel like you can take on the world, that you have the skills, that within you, you can drive to a higher place. And that is part of our goal and our objective. And now we have a way also to continue that. And we're so proud to partner with the Pace Girls, with now the Dolores Burr-Weaver Policy Center, and all of the girls from all over, Episcopal, Bowles, Ponte Vedra, Rebolt, Reigns. And let me just say this. We really believe strongly that when we learn together, when we live together, we will grow up and lead together. And in a day and age when we really, really value leadership, to bring up our girls to know each other when they're young, that's powerful.
All right, register now. It's not too late to register your teen girl for Gen Wow. It's genwow2017.eventbrite.com.
And mentors as well. Mentors are invited.
That's right. If you want to mentor at this event, you can search at Eventbrite for Generation Wow. A week from tomorrow, it's Wednesday, November 1st on the UNF campus. And this is free, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yes,
Donna Orender and Atiya Abdelmalek, thank you so much. I hope I didn't mangle that name. I have a tendency to do that with lots of people. Thank you both so much for being with us and joining us. This is only a week away, so register now. Thanks, ladies, for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum runs the board. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download the WJCT app to listen anytime. And if you missed anything this morning, hear our rebroadcast tonight at 8. Next on 1A, it's been almost a year since the presidential election left Democrats defeated. Can they get it together for 2018? Joshua Johnson of 1A looks at that. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.